You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, October 18th, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, debates last night in Ohio, Utah, Georgia. Speaking of Georgia, Georgia breaks first day early voting records for midterms. New poll, voters see a major threat to our democracy and don't really care. Also on the program, could a Democrat win the Oklahoma governor's race? Recession 12-month forecast see a recession at near 100% as the Fed tries to crush labor. Student loan debt relief applications are live. Go to it! Apparently, it's actually a very quick application. Like something like 65 seconds or something.
Nonetheless, I'm procrastinating it just like I did everything else in college.
That's right. Wake up, wake and bake, roll out of bed. First congressional office signs a union contract. And the heartwarming story of Nancy Pelosi's husband buying at least $1 million in Alphabet, at being formerly Google stock, just before she introduced the poison pill-laden congressional stock buying ban.
Stand your ground, folks.
All this and more on today's Majority Report. That's right, folks. People love a principled politician. And if you feel there should not be a ban on trading stocks, by all means, millions of dollars worth of purchasing of stocks, just to show that that ain't going to happen. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is, well, I'll allow Emma Vigeland to tell you what day it is. Emma, what day is it?
Newsday, Tuesday.
There you go.
That's what it is.
No, I wanted to do that.
Ah.
Yeah, that's
I was trying to remember. Yes, it is Stephanie Murphy, who is not seeking re-election and not running for a fourth term in this this year. And she was part of the coalition that helped sink that or was leading the effort to sink the ban on stock trading. So you can see that she's principled because she's not even going to be in office when people are selling on the information that they have in Congress. She'll be out. She cares about her friends that much. She wants them to make money.
Well, also, to be fair, she's probably going to become a lobbyist and knows that there's some value in being able to provide some inside information to motivate some of those lawmakers. That is something that we're obviously going to end up talking quite a bit about after the election, because that's when that that stuff will be addressed, or at least avoided.
Although they are using it, Republicans, in running against Democrats, by the way.
What? Oh, they did not pass the stock trading bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Pelosi makes it easy.
We're going to get into some of the debates last night and some interesting focus groups and try and get a sense of what's, you know, happening out there. I've spoken to a lot of people about this, these midterm elections, people who generally in the past, when I have spoken to them at this point in the run up of an election, usually had a good sense of what was going to happen. They weren't necessarily right. But they felt somewhat confident in making some type of prediction. I'm not running into a lot of people like that these days. Myself, and 50% of me says that the Democrats will maintain the Senate, lose the House. 25% of me says they could pick up two seats in the Senate and actually retain the House. And 25% of me says that they could get rolled big time. Mm. So... There it is. I mean, I'm no John from San Antonio, so...
I'll just say in the likelihood of the latter, they get rolled big time. I think we need to be out there talking about the previously mentioned war on labor that's going on right now. Like, that seems to be the main story to talk about.
And we're going to get into that, because I want to talk about inflation. I want to talk about how Democrats are talking about inflation. But, you know, I don't know. The idea that you have... You could win the Senate seat in Iowa. The Democrats could. They could win the governorship in Oklahoma and then maybe lose Arizona and Colorado. Or, I mean, it's nuts. But before we get into all that, just a slight anecdote. This is not a parenting anecdote. I want to play this clip of those Just Stop Oil protesters who poured a can of soup onto the glass protecting a Van Gogh painting in London. Just a couple of words. There was we can't quite track down the audio of one of the protesters explaining why she did this. Play this clip, and then I'll reiterate what I heard on the radio. But this is from the moment that they were actually doing it.
And glued at that point, right?
Yep.
What is worth more, art or life?
That's the word.
Is it worth more than food? Worth more than justice? Are you more concerned about the protection of a painting? Fuel is unaffordable to millions of whole hungry families. They can't even afford to heat a tin of soup.
What I heard in explaining why they did this, I don't know which protester it was. Like I say, it was audio, but she basically said, "Look, as much as I appreciate art and I understand why people were upset about it, the fact is that all of the great protest movements in the past have had similar reactions." And she said that she, as a gay woman, who I believe maybe she had mentioned that she was married, or I can't remember exactly what rights, but she was conscious of that she had because of protesters who came before her. And she went on to talk about the UK subsidizing oil, much in the way that we do in this country, and some of the specific policies that were taking place in the UK. And I just happened to hear that on the radio this morning on the AP, which was, you know, I listened to the radio in the morning to get a sense of that stuff. And I thought that was pretty good. I'm walking Saul to school. He is a 9-year-old kid. And we're on the way to school. And just out of the blue, he says, "You know that guy who cut his ear off, the painter?" And I'm like, "Van Gogh?" And he's like, "Yeah. Did you hear about that somebody poured soup onto a picture of his?" And I'm like, "I did hear about that." And he goes, I don't think that's right. I don't think you should do that to art. It was I was sort of shocked at, like, it was like, it is an important piece of art, you know, and an important piece of art in history. And I'm like, what? And... but we ended up talking about climate change, talking about the British policies in subsidizing oil and how we do that here. And at the end of that, I said, you know, that art was not damaged at all, which he did not know. But I don't know how you can make an assessment that protest was not incredibly effective, because I can assure you that I have never had a conversation like that with my son that he instigated and was willing to listen to for more than 30 seconds if I had instigated it. I mean, I hear stuff about, like, you know, the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie that's coming out, or you're not going to believe what happens in the new Spider-Man. You know, 4 different Spider-Man show up.
Spoiler.
Yeah, sorry. But that, I mean, that is, there. I mean, what... You know, name a more effective protest that we have had in this country, or I mean, I don't know, in this country, within like the past year or two, I can't come up with one.
You're supposed to get people talking. You're getting 9-year-olds all talking about it, right? I mean, that's
no violence.
No violence.
In the end, really, no damage. I mean, somebody sent me an email saying that the security guards there, you know, claim that there may be, you know, the museum may have to spend $100,000 on a new security to prevent that from happening. I don't know if that's the case or that's an exaggeration, but you know what? Take it from David Koch or whatever billionaire you're getting your money for from the museum.
I know
that $100,000 at the end of the day, if it takes $100,000 to have a kid 6,000 miles away at age 9, bring it up to his parents, money well spent.
Yeah.
Money well spent.
These kinds of museums are not short on money or benefactors for people that want to contribute and things like that. They have $100,000.
You know what you can do? Sell one of your paintings.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I found that pretty impressive. All right, let's go. And we're going to get to this. I just got an IM from Sam's tight pants. Georgia voter here. I will be sure to continue sharing updates as we go, but here are some early numbers from the first day of early voting in Georgia across 2018, 2020, and 2022. First day of early voting by cycle, 2022, 131,318. In 2020, it was 136. Now remember, that's a presidential election.
Yeah.
So only 5,000 more people essentially voted in 2020 versus 2022 on day one. 2018, which, as you know, was a record-breaking year, both for Republican and Democratic turnout, in an off-year election, was 70,000 early voting. Now, it's an 85% increase from the last midterm. It's a midterm record. Very hard to parse this type of stuff out because COVID made a lot of people more comfortable with voting, you know, early or by mail or, you know, sort of untraditional voting.
And Georgia in particular, there has been a statewide kind of push to say your lines might be very long if you live in certain communities. They might try to be preventing you from voting. So there's that literacy and understanding that might be driving that.
And I think and when we get into this more, I think there's some numbers that show that it's, you know, we're talking a significant majority of Democrats. Now, it's always unbalanced. Democrats always tend to vote early more than Republicans. But I think I also mentioned yesterday, in two of the biggest counties in Nevada that are Republican dominated, the Republican Party is specifically telling their voters not to vote early, not to vote by mail, to vote on a specific day, on voting day, but in a specific manner. Like, they were getting down to, like, don't use blue ink, use only black ink on your ballot, even though the ballot itself says use blue or black ink. And I don't know if they think this is, you know, somehow their black ink or blue ink is going to protect them from having their ballots washed in the server that we have in Germany, but
we have firmware for that.
But that's the, I mean... So you hear all of these different cross currents, and it's very, very difficult to sort of get a sense of what factors are at play. You can have polling that shows what the intentions of voters are, but we know that if it rains on election day, in the back in the days when people only voted on election day, it can implicate the turnout and so. With races that are this close, it's very, very difficult. But
any specificity in the instructions that they give serves to undercut the voting system more broadly, because it's like the more they make it seem like voting is so precarious that you got to wear red and write in black, then it makes it seem like certain votes aren't going to get counted. And so if the instructions weren't followed, the results were probably fraudulent anyway.
Right. Right. I mean, apparently, like 50% of Republicans, already don't trust the results of this election,
yeah,
or something like 40%. If I was them, I would stay home. But, you know.
Or write your ballots in invisible ink. How about that?
That's right. I mean, but
lemon juice to see it.
We'll see. I mean, we want a vibrant democracy. So make sure you get out there. All right. Let's play this. This is focus group video on the Fetterman Oz race in Pennsylvania. And I believe it's six voters, six Republicans, six Democrats, one independent, which I guess these focus group people know supposedly what they're doing. This is the swing state project, I think it's called, or the swing voter project. And the interesting thing about this is they're asking questions about positions and whatnot. And I think the thing that Fetterman and, you know, we were saying this early on, and, Emma has been following Fetterman's career for quite some time and has been a big Fetterman booster for a long time. The thing that Fetterman really did early on in this campaign was to define his opponent. And he did this actively. He did not wait for someone else to figure out that Oz was this or that, that he did it. And this is, you know, like when we talk about the frustrations we had with Warnock, and I understand the limitations that are imposed on him, it's not enough to just assume that the voters are going to say, like, hey, Herschel Walker's a lunatic. But listen to this. Let's start with the abortion stuff so that you get a sense of, like, you know, how much is abortion playing into Fetterman's thing? Now, we should say, when you look at the polling, people really are concerned about abortion. I know there was a poll out there that Mark Penn's outfit from Harvard Harris Polling put out there, and abortion didn't show up on the list of things they asked people about. They folded it into women's issues, which sounds like
my, it sounds like me when I'm talking about my period.
Honestly, yeah, it sounded like a teacher
who had to teach us sex ed.
Exactly.
I'm voting against PMS.
That's it. Honestly. I mean, so it's hard to find, honest polling, but people care about abortion. But listen to this. This is when the focus tester asks some Pennsylvania voters about Fetterman's position on abortion.
I'm not aware of Fetterman's stances on Roe v. Wade, so I don't feel like I can speak to it.
So, Stephanie, do you know where Fetterman stands on Roe v. Wade and abortion?
Not clearly, no.
No? John, do you know where Fetterman stands on abortion?
I do not.
Yolanda, do you know where Fetterman stands on abortion?
Not.
We're less than 1 month away from the midterm elections. From what you just heard from swing voters, you can set aside many of the assumptions that you have about what's driving the Pennsylvania Senate race. It's not just about abortion and inflation, or Trump and Biden. Instead, here's a clue to what it is about.
How many of you would say that your decision to vote for either Fetterman or Oz will be driven, at least in part, by a concern for which party controls the U.S. Senate in 2023, by show of fingers? So John, Brandon, Bob, okay, all of you except for Amy, so six of you.
Well, I don't want to see the Republicans in charge of the Senate. I don't want to see them in charge of the House either in any way. I'd like to see something other than the charge to kill democracy, the charge to, you know, spring forward with, you know, economic plans that support the upper 2%, if not the upper 1%.
There's too much at stake. There's too many potential human rights issues, climate change among them. I think that we can see a stronger economy in the next decade if we move away from oil quickly.
I just feel like the Republican candidates, just too much drama, and I'm just over it.
Okay. What's interesting about that to me is that is a completely generic answer, right? I mean, that is theoretically divorced from who the candidates are. Mm-hmm. It's also far more sort of like sophisticated perspective than we generally anticipate, but maybe because it's been 50-50 in the Senate, people are aware of it. But and the interesting thing too, from that guy's perspective on the economy improving and this and that, in a piece in the Washington Post about, you know, that covers this focus group and some others, largely what they're finding is that when people are concerned about inflation, they're not blaming it on a specific party. They're not blaming it on the Democrats or Biden. There seems to be a broad awareness that their supply lines are problematic, that there's some price gouging going on. So that is an area that's ripe for, and Warnock touched on this a little bit with his debate with Walker, talking about corporate, corporations taking advantage of this. But let's get back to the Fetterman-Oz race, because you wonder how much of what we're about to hear really animates the rest of this. Remember, these are swing voters. So they're, you know, if you were to talk to the Republican base, they might be out there, you know, saying that, you know, Brandon is, you know, taking is Hitler. And if you were talking about the Democratic base, they might be saying abortion rights. But here, remember, these are swing voters. And here is where I think, you know, Fetterman's skill at being a good campaigner really shines.
Among these 13 respondents, 6 are registered Republicans, 6 are registered Democrats, and 1 is an independent. When I asked who they plan to vote for in the Senate race, 9 said Fetterman, 2 said Oz, and 2 remain undecided. They made clear the candidate quality matters, and Fetterman's stroke was not a major voting concern, nor were Oz's attacks on Fetterman's criminal justice record. Here are the words they associate with Fetterman, and focus on what they don't say as well as what they do say.
Fraud.
Cannabis.
I was going to say the same. Cannabis and weed.
He wants to help people get out of jail.
I feel optimistic about him. He feels different than some of the candidates I'm used to seeing. I think that he has a younger approach or mindset than some of the other candidates running.
Raise taxes. Tax invasion.
Intimidating.
Braddock. All you hear him say is about Braddock. Unpolished.
Tough guy.
Plain spoken and qualified.
And throw in the word tall.
Awesome. But,
that's true.
His health issues. Unsure.
And here are the words and phrases they associate with Dr. Oz.
New Jersey. A doctor. TV.
I would say he's unqualified, and to me, he's kind of a joke.
Tragic weight loss con man.
That was the first thing that came to mind.
Oprah and pharmaceuticals.
Celebrity.
Like scam and lies. I always saw him pushing stuff.
He doesn't live in quite in the state of Pennsylvania. Lives on the outskirts.
Ouch. Celebrity. Yep, that's the Republican.
Entertainer.
Reality TV.
New Jersey.
I mean,
look at that.
That is textbook defining your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
All of that time over the summer when Fetterman was doing just those memes and just hitting that over and over and over again. And then you get until October. And every one of those people on that panel had basically were repeating a narrative that Fetterman had been driving in one form or another throughout that entire time. And there's no coming back from that.
No, I mean, this is exactly what we always say on this program, which is that the Democrats need to get ahead out of narratives and create narratives themselves. And then the media starts talking about them as opposed to always playing defense or responding and worrying about what the media is going to say. Republicans have been doing this for years. It was Benghazi, until then everyone's on the media is trying to treat Benghazi seriously. It was Hillary's emails. And then that was one of the things that swung the election in 2016. So you create your own narratives, and then they begin to, when you're aggressive on it, they percolate and they get into people's minds. When that guy said drama really quickly at that first part, who do you think they, that these independents or these undecideds associate drama with.
Well,
more.
It's Donald Trump.
Right. I mean, the point. So that's helpful as well when you're connecting to like reality TV, Oprah. That's the secondary narrative that he's been pushing, which is kind of handed to him by Dr. Oz being the way that he is. But the New Jersey thing, the Snooki meme, it pays off. And then when she says youthful, that's the way he's been campaigning as well. So it's he's not Bernie Sanders, but in terms of the way that he's run, it's flawless. So.
And you heard one or two people in that thing even raise his health issues.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the bottom line is if you start out early and you set a narrative about your opponent and you get there into the block, all they need to do is show just a little bit. I saw an ad from Fetterman that was really funny. He was like explaining on how his stroke causes him to combine two words. He said, like, for instance, let's say you're at like a Wegner's, and you think you're at a Redner's. You might say you're at a Regner's, you know, that type of thing. But think for a moment, what is the narrative about Herschel Walker? I mean, you know, what is it?
Not that good of a family man and that he's paid for abortions.
It could have been.
Why was Warnock not pushing that on the debate stage? And why was it? I feel like Warnock has not been vocal at all. And again, like, I do think it's this concept of being senatorial because he's already in power. And Fetterman doesn't give a damn about that. And Like, in theory, it could apply to him. He's the lieutenant governor, right? He could be above this kind of campaigning, but he's not. And it's working for him. And I'm much more concerned right now, even though I know polls are narrowing in Pennsylvania. But Georgia, from what I've seen, I'm a little bit more worried than I thought I would be. And I feel much more comfortable with the way Fetterman set himself up.
I mean, Herschel Walker has a long history before he even gets to that campaign of sort of lying about things. I mean, and if you wanted to set a narrative, it would be like erratic, right? That plays into the accusations of violence or threats of violence. You could subtly say, we need a calm, steady, upfront person. I mean, there's a way to build the narrative. He doesn't necessarily have to be as funny and memey and as, you know, he doesn't have to have the same style as Fetterman. But the idea is you need to define your opponent. You need to do it early. You cannot rely on the media to do it for you. You cannot rely on people to sort of come up with this, you know, you got Herschel Walker out there, and he's got his buddy who's the sheriff who gave him the badge. Yeah. And, you know, it works. It works. You got a sheriff saying, I gave him this badge, and he's my buddy. And
he looks
and
like he's part of the community. Yeah. I mean, I know, like, everyone on liberal Twitter just memeing the crap out of that moment. Please don't feel smug about that. What it looks like is that Herschel Walker made a connection with some sheriff in the community, and then he's showing it off. It might come off as goofy, but that doesn't matter, right? Mike, it comes off as goofy to us. I feel that he's an idiot. I feel he's a bad candidate, but I don't think that hurts him broadly. He's a guy with a ton of name recognition who came off fairly well compared to what the expectations were in that debate. And now it looks like he has a deeper connection to other parts of Georgia. And so I actually don't think it was a negative at all for him.
No, I don't think so. In the final analysis, it's not going to be. Just getting an IM here from Left is Deaf. As a black man myself, I can see why Warnock is hesitant to drive home every stereotype against black men to characterize your opponent. This is a tough pickle for political analysis, and I don't know how to factor in black masculinity as its own network of a kind.
That's a good
point. I am sensitive to that, but Warnock could do this without being too explicit about it. Just to guide the narrative, you have to. You have to. I understand the sort of the guardrails here, but nevertheless, this is a pretty important election. But with that said, setting up that idea, let's look at the second debate between Tim Ryan and J.D. Vance. And again, on a policy level, you know, there's not a whole lot about Tim Ryan that I like. I mean, I think he's become a little bit more populist, a little bit more, labor friendly. I think he's starting to follow the Sherrod Brown sort of like playbook for Ohio to the extent that you can, you know, at this point. But here is, I think like a very helpful, this is, we talk about defining your opponent. Tim Ryan stumbled onto this, I think maybe a little bit in the first debate, and he picked it up and went full hog, in the second one.
Gentlemen, political subservience is kryptonite to this hotly contested race. Mr. Vance, Congressman Ryan has called you Donald Trump's ass-kisser, implication being you will pay any price for the endorsement and support of the former president who publicly insulted you in Youngstown. To prove the congressman wrong and to show Ohio voters that you are your own man, I would like you to identify one issue that Mr. Trump is wrong about and therefore deserving of public criticism.
I love this question.
Look, I disagree with the president on a number of things. He's a friend of mine, of course, and I'm proud to have his endorsement. But look, the thing that was wrong about the Trump administration is they put a lot of people in the administration, a lot of bad personnel folks who actually advocated limitless, nonstop wars that would mean a lot of folks from Mahoning Valley and a lot of folks from where I grew up would have to go off and fight those wars. A guy like John Bolton, for example, should have never been national security advisor in the Trump administration. But let me address Tim Ryan's point and your question there. Donald Trump told a joke. He told a joke at a rally based on a false New York Times story, and Tim Ryan has decided to run his entire campaign on it. Now look, Tim Ryan is publicly out there on national television saying, I love Nancy Pelosi. A few months ago, he went before a national audience and said that he has to suck up and kiss up to Chuck Schumer. The guy who's subservient to the national party is Tim Ryan, who's been begging for these guys to come into this race and save him from the campaign that he's been running. So look, it's ridiculous for him to accuse me of being anything because he has utterly failed to be independent to represent this valley, and he will utterly fail to represent the people of Ohio if he's elected to the United States Senate.
So I get this straight. When the former president said, J.D. is kissing my ass because he wants my support, you took that as a joke?
I know the president very well, and absolutely, he was joking about a New York Times story. That's all he was doing. I didn't take offense to it. I talked to the president before it. I talked to the president afterwards. Everybody there took it as a joke. This guy goes on national TV and says, I love Nancy Pelosi, and has the audacity of accusing me of kissing anyone's rear end. It's pretty rich.
Okay, so we'll get to you, Congressman.
Yeah.
Mr. Vance has portrayed you as a lapdog for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other Democratic leaders in Congress, and says that you will do their bidding in the Senate. To prove him wrong, I would like you to point to an issue that Speaker Pelosi has totally bungled and therefore deserves public repudiation.
Well, let me just first say that this is obviously a clip that J.D. is running to try to misrepresent people. I ran against Nancy Pelosi, J.D., for leadership. And you have to have the courage to take on your own leaders. These leaders in D.C., they will eat you up like a chew toy, right? I mean, you were calling Trump America's Hitler. Then you kissed his ass.
That's not true.
It is true. And then you kissed his ass, and then he endorsed you. And you said he's the greatest president of all time. Mitch McConnell gave you $40 million to prop up your campaign. Peter Thiel gave you $15 million. That's $55 million, J.D. What do you think they want for that? They want your loyalty. And you proved that you'll kiss their ass, too. And look, it's nothing personal. I'm just telling you, like, I've been in this business. It's tough business. If you think you're going to help Ohio, you're not. If you can't even stand up for yourself, how are you going to stand up for the people of the state? How are you going to take on the corporate interests? All the money you took are from the corporations who sent all our jobs overseas. Peter Thiel, $15 million, buddy. What do you think he wants?
Can you answer the question?
So,
I mean,
How's his ass taste?
Honestly, like I don't know how he could do better than that. He managed to both personally address him down while saying it's nothing personal.
Looking him in the eye, laughing as he talks, but not over the top.
He managed to bring in how much he is not only a lapdog for Trump, but also for these massive corporate interests. He brought in all this outside money that is there. He brought in all these corporate heads who are going to ship jobs out. I mean, he managed to get, I don't know how many words he used relative to how many words J.D. Vance used, but he managed to bring into there a half a dozen concepts that all are consistent with the narrative that this guy is a corporate Trumpy crony, and you can't really trust him because all it's going to take is a couple of bucks and he's going to be doing whatever these people say.
Yeah. And a weak kind of portrayal of him as a bit of a weak person who's going to flip-flop. One, he calls him America's Hitler. Now he's carrying water for him. So not just it's like he's worse than a crony. He's a water boy.
People are asking if he answered the question. Yeah, the whole point of like running against Pelosi, that's the first time I heard of Tim Ryan on a national level is challenging her for the speakership.
Right.
I think he could have got to that a little bit sooner, but he answered the question.
It is interesting that he went with like the I love Pelosi quote when it's fairly well documented that Tim Ryan was her most formidable challenger for speaker in quite a long
time.
That's
how he made his name. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, we didn't like and didn't necessarily support his challenge at the time, but it was evident.
Yep. That was. I think that's pretty strong. Let's. And again, Ryan is trying to. To portray Vance as a couple of things. One, sort of a radical, but just a guy who's going to say anything. And that's why he started off that thing with you said that Trump was Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
This is called getting your cake and eating it too. He's trying to sow doubt in even the minds of the Trump supporters.
Yep.
And so he says, you said Trump was Hitler, but then he gave you something and then you said he was a great president. And here is, this is clip number two. This is where Ryan is really basically trying to show that J.D. Vance will say anything because he believes nothing. And this is an easy narrative to build upon because J.D. Vance believes nothing and will say anything. And here it is.
Support him. Alex Jones, a right-wing talk radio show with a huge following, said that the Sandy Hook murders of those young, precious babies in Connecticut, he said it was a hoax. And he went on and said it was a hoax. And I've met these families from Sandy Hook. Absolutely devastated. You lose a fourth grader to a madman. And this guy says it was a hoax. Our guy JD says this is one of the most credible news sources in the whole country. And he just got convicted, and he just got sued to the tune of billions of dollars that he owes the family for putting them through this grief. And I just want people to know, it's like, we are running for the United States Senate. This is the highest office you could get in this country except for president. And he's running around backing these extremists, the most extreme people in the country, a guy who denied Sandy Hook. He's like, he's credible.
Thank you, Congressman.
I mean, you don't have to. It's maddening.
This is a complete fabrication. I never
JD, you're
said
on
that,
tape,
Tim.
Brother. You're on tape,
I
man.
I never said that, Tim. You, go and run the tape and find out exactly what I
it'll
said.
It'll be like 30 minutes, and we're all going to know you're lying.
I never said that. No.
I mean, there it is.
Let's go. I love that. He's doing a great job.
Yeah, this is a good campaign, and it's also. I mean. It is, you look at Tim Ryan in this, and it's basically like you just feel like the dude just put on a sport coat because he just walked out of the bar, right? I mean, that's basically it. He's just so, he's casual up there. And this is, I don't know how many people are watching these debates in Ohio, but it's hard to watch these debates and not think that J.D. Vance is going to have a problem there. I mean,
yeah.
Again, there is, on both sides, rock solid votes for people. And I don't know how much there is in the middle, essentially, but it really is about like how you mobilize and how you depress the vote on the other side. And I think, like, you know, suppressing the vote. There was one thing I saw in that focus group about Fetterman and Oz. And there was one or two guys in there who said, I will vote against Oz if I think it's close. I will cast, they're a Republican, but I will cast what he called a protest vote against Oz for Fetterman if it's close. If it's not close, he doesn't want to have to pull the lever for mm-hmm. Fetterman. But, you know, you wonder how much that is also in this dynamic here. A lot of people in the Republican Party still have a problem with Donald Trump. And tying them in to Donald Trump and to Alex Jones and this stuff is helpful.
Yeah. Vance also just looks, my final real observation on this is he just looks so unserious and unprepared up there compared to Tim Ryan, who's been a politician for a long time, but he understands how to present himself as an everyman. And J.D. Vance is a Peter Thiel venture capitalist ghoul who has nothing to his name except that, and also a best-selling book that appealed to New York Times editorial board reading liberals. And I just don't think he's got the stuff. He might win because Ohio is redder than it's been, and it continues to trend down that road. But in terms of quality of candidate, it's pretty clear, in my opinion.
It's interesting. You know, I saw a poll today out of Ohio, and I don't know what to make of this either, frankly. I mean, so much I think of this is tends to be a function of. So much of this tends to be a function of like sort of like just a broad, you know, culture war on some level. But let's play this clip of the final clip of that debate where J.D. Vance is trying to worm out of his like abortion exceptions type of stuff. Like he's really parsing quite a bit here. Let's play this.
That little girl was raped by an illegal immigrant, and both the media and Tim Ryan need to be honest about the fact that she would never have been raped in the first place if Tim Ryan had done his job on border security. So let's talk about the full picture and the full slate of exceptions, absolutely, but let's not let the Democrats off the hook for letting these career criminals into our state to prey on our little girls in the first place.
Well, what are the full slate of exceptions?
Look, there are a number of different exceptions here, and here's the thing that I want to say here is you cannot say with total confidence what every single exception in every single case is going to be. And let me offer just a specific example here. So I know a lot of pro-life people. I know people who have been pro-life since before I was born. One of the things they will tell you is they support an exception in the case of incest, for example. I've heard a number of pro-life people say that. But an incest exception looks different at 3 weeks of pregnancy versus 39 weeks of pregnancy. So I actually don't think that you can say on a debate stage every single thing that you're going to vote for when it comes to an abortion piece of legislation. What I am willing to do, and what I think is a lot more helpful for voters who are actually listening to this, is to say, number one, what are my principles? My principles here are I want to save as many lives as possible, and I'd love to get us to a country where young women don't feel pressured by boyfriends, by family to have abortions, where adoption services are available, and where young women can get access to the health care that they need to have babies. That's some of the principles that I really care about. The other,
I mean, I don't know if Ryan hit him hard on this, but the idea that, like, I can't tell you what exceptions I'm going to vote for in an abortion ban. And first off, we all know that these exceptions are absurd. What 3 weeks into the pregnancy of an incest victim, how do they establish? Where is this established that they are a victim of incest? Is it a court? Is it a court case that takes place within 3 weeks that resolves this? How do they do this? These exceptions are total BS.
They're just ways to make the position of Republicans seem less extreme, and they have no functional actual, they never function. They're never going to be used.
Because they're fig leaves.
They're fig leaves, yeah.
And even his fig leaf, he's saying, well,
Actually, the shape of my fig leaf is not exactly like a fig. It's sort of like a fig, but it's also like a
fig leaf.
It's like a maple. It's like a maple. It's sort of like an oak. It's very impossible for me to tell you, to describe what the fig leaf looks like until I actually see it. I mean, this is a, this is not like he said, there were pro-life people before he was even born. He still hasn't figured out what exceptions he thinks are legitimate.
Yeah, we'll wing it.
That's pretty extreme.
Yeah, he also started off with that whole canard about the undocumented folks being rapists, very Trump-like. And just to say, like, most rapists know their victims and aren't undocumented people. So the idea that that should bear on a discussion of abortion and, like you said, like, we should be talking about exceptions is ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is a poll from Ohio. This is a Baldwin Wallace University poll, 856 registered voters in Ohio. I was surprised by this. It comes out of WVXU. Howard Wilkinson wrote this piece and cited this poll. 59% of voters said they would amend Ohio's constitution to make access to abortion a fundamental right. Recreational marijuana, 58% believe recreational use of marijuana should be legalized. 60% say Congress should pass a law to legalize same-sex marriage throughout the U.S. Majorities of all demographic groups, including conservatives and gun owners, support a number of steps referred to as common-sense gun restrictions. Mm. Whopping 85% favor expanding background checks for gun purchasers 18 to 21. Teaching racism and sexual orientation, three-quarters of Ohioans surveyed support teaching both history and impact of racism in public schools. 57% support teaching middle and high schoolers about sexual orientation. Two out of three Ohioans believe climate change is caused, at least in part, by human activity. I mean, the bottom line is, I think if Tim Ryan wins, I think that it shows that in some of these states that we perceive as red or purplish red, so much of it is aesthetics. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe there's something, you know, slightly deeper than aesthetics, but it is, so much of it is about having a good campaigner and one that fits some type of narrative as to what an Ohioan or what a Pennsylvanian is like. And in both these races, with Ohio and Pennsylvania, you have someone who feels like a little bit of an outsider, certainly Oz more so because Fetterman's done such a good job of defining him that way. But J.D. Vance also comes off as a little bit of an outsider. I mean, he looks a little slicker on that stage. He's talking with he's sort of dancing around a little bit more, and Ryan's being more plain spoken. I would love if these races hinged upon one guy saying, I want to expand Social Security, and the other guy saying, I want to cut Social Security, which, incidentally, the Republicans are now talking about that they want to do that. You're starting to hear Republican congressional leaders talking about Social Security and Medicare reform.
That's a danger I always thought when all the Republicans were rushing to, like, denigrate the Rick Scott thing, is like, well, wait till they get credit for that and then use that cover to go and do all that stuff.
Right. And so the bottom line is like, it's just not as much about specific issues. That focus group hadn't heard anything about the Inflation Reduction Act.
Or about abortion, even relative to Fetterman.
Yeah. And I don't know that they didn't care. They do care. They don't care. Now, again, these are voters who are up in the air, who may be, more intent on voting without having a sense of who they're going to vote for at that moment. But it is not moderate positions that is doing it for these candidates. There's no moderation per se in what John Fetterman is offering. What he's offering is a vision of, I'm a better guy than that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's coming up with a Pennsylvania specific way in which to tell that story. And Tim Ryan is doing the same thing in Ohio, where the odds are much more stacked against him.
And both of them have run campaigns within the state multiple times. Fetterman in Braddock, Fetterman for lieutenant governor, and then Tim Ryan being a member of the House for a long period of time, where they know how to win, at least within those specific contexts, and they can kind of bring that blueprint to their Senate races. And I think that's making a difference for both of them right now.
All right, we got some bad news to report. This is breaking. Workers at an Amazon warehouse, or at the Amazon warehouse outside of Albany, voted against unionizing 406 to 206. Steve Greenhouse, I don't think he's still with the New York Times, said he's eager to see some serious reporting about why the union lost and what Amazon did to press and pressure workers to vote against unionizing, especially at a warehouse with such a bad safety record. I guess we'll get a notion of what that is.
Chris Smalls had a statement immediately after, essentially saying that they felt that the voting process was not free nor fair, and that he called it a sham election in his statement. So I'm curious to see more details, but it seems like, at least from ALU's end, there's been their opinion is that there's been some dirty business here.
And I guess we'll get it.
And I would not be shocked, of course.
No, that wouldn't be shocking. and the real question is, you know, we'll see how the National Labor Relations Board reacts. They had issues with what happened in Bessemer. This vote, not as close as Bessemer, I think, was. And I guess we'll see.
And what's so just upsetting about this, and you just see the power of a company like Amazon, is that basically, the ALU, from my understanding, had to put some of their more national ambitions on the back burner because Amazon has them tied up in legal battles about the first successful unionization at JFK 8. And so this is kind of what happens when you're tied up by a major, major behemoth of a corporation that has so much power.
It may speak to some of the limitations, too, of independent unions in going against such a massive entity like Amazon.
Right.
But we'll have time to talk about that, I imagine, in the coming days. Maybe with Chris Mulls. We'll see about that.
Mm.
All right. I guess let's head into the let's just play this one clip. Look, let's do play number 8. I think Evan McMullen is like a CIA ghoul who, you know, I have very, very, very limited interest in, Never Trumpers from the Republican Party, unless they are actively harming other Republicans. In that moment, on, let's say, a televised stage. And so let's play this clip because
this is a let them fight situation.
Exactly. Exactly. This is I couldn't hope more that every Republican engages other Republicans and they eat each other. When I see reports that Mitch McConnell and Peter Thiel are feuding, I root for the feud. That's where I fall.
Yeah, like critical resources to whoever's behind.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or on the attack.
Exactly. I am rooting for them to lock the cage and until so that no one gets out. But Thiel and Mitch McConnell are fighting. Over Thiel wants to pour money into Blake Masters because after he poured money into J.D. Vance, he wants his crew in the Senate. I'll remind you, incidentally, just apropos of nothing, the origin story of my little feud with Jimmy Dore came out of his podcast in 2016 where he was talking about it doesn't matter if Peter Thiel is named one of the Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, what's the difference?
What's the difference, I think, was the quote. But here is Evan McMullen making fun of Utah Senator Mike Lee, who apparently has outed himself as having a propensity of referring to himself in the third person in a op-ed that he wrote in the Salt Lake City, I think it was newspaper, something to the effect of Mike Lee is a great guy. But here is McMullen.
Relatively quickly, in the first part of this, we've broken it into four questions. But this one is a very basic one that will go to the senator. Did Joe Biden fairly, that's the important word, did Joe Biden fairly win the 2020 presidential election?
Pause it. Here's Michael Lee. Yeah, first. He's going to answer first.
Yes, Joe Biden is our president. He was chosen in the only election that matters, the election held by the Electoral College. It was on that basis that I voted to certify the election results. The Electoral College cast its vote. Joe Biden won that. Now, as to whether there were errors, as to whether some states might have conducted their elections better than others, there's always room for debate and questions about that. Some people expressed concerns about the number of states using universal mail-in balloting for the first time in 2020. Unlike Utah, they hadn't tested it out. In Utah, we've got these signature verification protocols. We've got elaborate procedures for going through the voter registration rules to make sure that the wrong people, people who have died or moved out of state.
Pause it for 1 second. You know where they're not using signature verified rolls? You know where they're, do you know?
What?
It's a little state known as Florida.
Oh, Florida. I was going
to
say Arizona.
Yes, Governor DeSantis has said that you no longer have to do that if you're in one of the Republican counties hit by Hurricane Ian. Oh. I just thought I'd drop that in there.
But if you're in still like Miami or wherever.
But if you're in Miami, you still got to do it.
And it's also interesting that a lot of candidates always bemoan like the delay in vote counting when a lot of those state legislators made it more difficult to count early votes earlier.
Totally.
Well, like, yeah.
Florida actually, before DeSantis changed this for some of the counties, that's the reason we got those votes so quickly in 2020, because they did not pass that piece of legislation. Pennsylvania took so many more days because they actually passed a law before to delay the count of early votes and provisional ballots.
But they're just wildly swinging, right? Anything that undercuts the appearances of the election, you know, being fair, or anything that provides more hurdles for people, it's all a win for them if that's the case. But yeah.
All right, let's hear Mike Lee. He's looking so sincere.
Aren't voting. In other states, there were open questions about that, about ballot harvesting and things like that. But ultimately, what matters is the Electoral College, and the Electoral College won. I would add here, it's absolutely essential that the authority to conduct elections remain in state hands, never consolidated in federal hands, where the risk of corruption is great. On this, my opponent and I disagree. My opponent has expressed support for legislation backed by the Democrats called S1. S1 would consolidate excessive authority over elections in the federal government. It would do so, moreover, in a way that would virtually cobble the states in their ability to enact voter security measures like voter ID. This is a bad step. We should shun it like the plague.
Mr. McMullen.
Well, I certainly think it's important that we protect voters' rights and that we protect the peaceful transfer of power, Senator Lee. But for you to talk about the importance of the Electoral College, I think is rich. I think you know exactly how important it is. And I think you knew how important it was when you sought to urge the White House that had lost an election to find fake electors to overturn the will of the people. Senator Lee, that was the most egregious betrayal of our nation's Constitution in its history by a U.S. senator, I believe, and it will be your legacy. Senator Lee is still casting doubt.
Please.
Look,
ladies and gentlemen, you just took about 7 or 8 minutes away from the candidates. We're here to hear them.
What?
Chastising Lee, the audience.
You advised spurious so-called legal efforts to mislead tens of millions of Americans that the election had been stolen. And congratulations, you succeeded. As recently as this year, and even tonight, you're still casting doubt on the legitimacy of the election. No, you're doing a tremendous disservice to this country, Senator Lee. You have betrayed your oath to the Constitution with this. It is and for this state, Utah, that was founded by people like my ancestors and yours.
Well, there you go. I mean, my favorite part is watching. There's something about like libertarians who they just cannot help themselves in being the most making the most nerdiest choices at any point. And the false bravado that guys like Lee and Ted Cruz have. They both have almost the exact same postures. They both have the same sort of like feigned, like, look at me, I'm a tough guy. I just can't, when I see Mike Lee like that, I just remember when Ted Cruz looked into that camera and said, Donald Trump, you are a punk,
yeah,
a two-bit punk. And then like 3 weeks later, he's like, hey, can I get you?
Would you like to cast your vote for Donald Trump?
Do you want your, exactly.
And he's like moving out of the frame to kind of just like leer while McMullen's talking.
Oh, also, he's pissed.
And he's waving to the moderator like he's hailing a cab. He's like, excuse me, can I get some time back, please?
Yeah, I mean, he just like, he comes off like, Mike Lee comes off like a bully and a jerk, and Evan McMullen comes off like a dork, but they're...
Yeah. Can I talked with the lads at Brigham Young Money podcast about this race, and there's a bunch to say about Evan McMullen. First of all, folks should remember, like, as he's draping himself in the garb of democracy, that he was A, saying that he's to the right of Trump on abortion in 2016, and B, his entire gambit was to get a number of electors so he could have at the convention, the party elites overrule the,
right,
the Republican voters and give him the nomination. And also, he's a CIA guy. And also, Mike Lee, like, sucks, and I'm not one of the leftists who downplays the threat to democracy from the Republican Party, but Mike Lee, the one thing he has done is work with Bernie Sanders and Chris Murphy on the limiting war powers stuff.
Yeah.
And I, to see a CIA guy replace him for that, like, it's kind of a wash.
Oh, you, without a doubt. No, I don't think there is any, there's nothing decent that comes out of that. I just hope it hurts the brand of all of them.
Right.
That's the best thing that could come out of it. They both lose, if that's possible. Folks, we're going to head into the fun half.
Whoa.
Time just flew in that hour.
I know. Well, we got a lot. I mean, 21 days.
21 days before the election.
Gosh,
I'm starting to get, I had like a nightmare last night that was involved, that involved like the Republicans winning. So I'm starting to actually.
Well, prepare yourself.
Early voting is happening in at least half the states by now, folks. So get on it. Vote, get your friends to vote, get your family to vote. Just get out there, vote. It's not going to take you more than, I don't know, an hour or two max. Just do it. Meanwhile, this program exists with your support. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only help the show survive and thrive, you get the free half free of commercials. And then you get the fun half. And to a certain extent, you support people getting the fun half who don't have the financial means at this point to sign up for the fun half. So, I don't know. It's a win-win-win, as who is it?
Some say.
Yeah.
Well,
who stole
that
from? Yeah. Who stole that from me yesterday? Was it Jordan Peterson?
Ooh, who was it? It was one of those guys, but I can't put my finger.
No, it was. It was Weinstein.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It was Brett Weinstein. Yeah, stealing my one of my like catchphrases.
I'm looking forward to that debate because I think what's his name, Robert Wright or whatever his name was. I might be able to give Brett Weinstein.
Do you think he's going to show up?
I think so.
Yeah, they just it's all just about driving. It's all about driving podcast traffic with those people.
Is it actually going to happen?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll see.
Could just be a posturing.
Yeah, of course. Who cares? I mean, it'll be fun to watch. But yeah. Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. What else? Emma, what's happening on the ESVN?
Well, yesterday we broke down the weekend for the NFL season. The Giants and Jets are 5-1 and 4-2 respectively. So Bradley and I had a good time, and then we just talked a little bit about how Brady seems to be losing the locker room, as well as just some other notes from the weekend. The Bills are definitely the best team in the NFL right now. What they can do to actually cement a Super Bowl victory. Sign Odell. And then we also had Wozni Lombre on to preview the NBA season, which starts tonight. I'm sure Matt is incredibly excited about that. Mm-hmm. Talked about the Knicks. I had a coughing fit in the middle of the interview, and which was always great. And then we also just talked about a bunch of other teams, who's going to be likely to get the number one overall pick, some of the five worst teams in the NBA this year, plus who's actually a legitimate title contender. Check that out.
Yeah, so folks should go sign up and subscribe to your YouTube channel, right?
Yeah, youtube.com/ESVN show. We're going to be migrating things over there quite shortly, so you won't be seeing it on the Majority Report for in perpetuity, but at least for this week. And then I think on Monday we'll still have the flagship show on the Majority Report channel, but we're moving OT over there after this week.
Oh, and people should go subscribe at Left Reckoning. How many subscribers do you have now?
I've got like 23,000.
Let's throw it off. So,
whatevs. That's good.
Whatevs.
Yeah, I mean, we've been able to still grow.
And you're doing this without any of the LaRoucheite support. You've lost the LaRoucheites.
Antagonizing them, kind of. Yeah. which we're going to be actually talking a little bit more about that. We're going to be talking about both the LaRouche protest of AOC and the Just Stop Oil thing, and a lot more to say about those things. And tonight on Left Reckoning, as well as the return of Harvey Kay, historian of America, talking about before he was a historian of America, when he was writing about the British Marxist historians. That's literally the book title, about Hobsbawm and Christopher Hill and a few other guys. And we talk about that, which I really like because I'm a big history reader for a long time. So tonight, patreon.com/leftreckoning to get access to the postgame.
I hope those protests are successful with AOC, because if we get her out of there, I think we'll be able to finally be able to get the war hawks out.
Just a preview, I think it's interesting, like the people who, because I'm pretty ambivalent about even the AOC one, but I think it's worthwhile pointing out like who the LaRoucheites are,
without a doubt.
And but I also think like there's a certain type of folks who wanted to disqualify the Just Stop Oil protest based on like a connection to like Getty an inheritance or something like that. Meanwhile, say it's off limits to talk about the LaRouche background to those protesters.
Right.
So
right.
I just think we're just gonna hash through that a little bit.
And the idea, like, I'm not even clear on, like, what the, I mean, the fact that there are members of these, like, incredibly wealthy families who have some sense of, like, how their money was accrued and are trying to, at the very least, you know, I mean, personally, I would just, there's an easy way to do this. They should also push for basically a confiscatory tax on their entire families. But short of that, donating money to these protest groups that are fighting the legacy of their families seems to me exactly what you would want them to do.
Right. Or if you were conspiratorial and say this is a psyop by the oil industry, what you wouldn't want to do then is go on and say how that makes you want to roll coal, because then you'd be playing right into
exactly.
the psyop.
Exactly. And I mean, I think it's definitely worthy of debate as to funding Ukraine, without a doubt. But let's be clear here. I mean, we can talk more about the Ukraine funding and whatnot. But I mean, there's an incredible dilemma. You have a guy who has invaded another country. In every other circumstance, the idea that we wouldn't support a country being invaded or wouldn't want to from the left or, an occupied territory, I don't know if that rings any bells, is absurd. I mean, the real question is to how much support we give and, what are the stakes here? Because there is a fear that... That Putin's going to use tactical nukes that could lead to a response, that could lead to strategic nukes. But you also have to consider the implications of, like, allowing the threat of nukes to basically freeze you in your tracks. I wouldn't do that with Israel, and they have by all accounts, though they don't publicly announce it, have nuclear capacity as well. And it's hard for me to imagine people on the left saying, like, well, you shouldn't antagonize them because they may, use a tactical nuke in the West Bank or something. The blowback on that would be a little bit different in terms of, like, input, crossing their own territory. But nevertheless,
And Russia's nuclear arsenal is so. I think not factoring that into the way that into the conversation, and especially how many nukes they actually have. It's a massive nuclear arsenal, only rivaled by ours. Then I feel like that's almost just like putting your head in the sand.
Right. But the dynamic is similar, right? It doesn't start with the launching of that entire arsenal, and nor would it start, in the instance, let's say, of Israel. Israel sends a nuke. Somebody else is probably going to send a nuke. And then we're going to send a nuke in response to that nuke. And then someone's going to send another nuke in response to that nuke. I mean, that's the concern is, I mean, A, how many they have, but it really is, one decision after another decision as it escalates. And so it's hard to assess like where that escalation would end.
But in also supporting Israel is not the anti-war position, where it's just a bit different in terms of supporting the country that's been invaded by an imperial.
Well, that's
power.
My point.
Right, right.
That's my point. All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. We'll take your phone calls, 646-257-3920. Don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
No! Oh, no! Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
And the alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See, white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang. Okay, I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back. Back, back, back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them. Fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan. By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on. Someone needs to pay the price of blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.